Chapter 72. Magic Lantern. But she appeared to remember me perfectly, and still to suspect me of being in a state of intoxication. Finding by degrees, however, that I was sober, and, I hope, that I was a modest young gentleman, Mrs. Waterbrook softened towards me considerably, and inquired, firstly, if I went much into the parks, and secondly, if I went much into society. On my replying to both these questions in the negative, it occurred to me that I fell again in her good opinion, but she concealed the fact gracefully, and invited me to dinner next day. I accepted the invitation, and took my leave, making a call on Uriah in the office as I went out, and leaving a card for him in his absence. When I went to dinner next day, and on the street door being opened, plunged into a vapor bath of haunch of mutton, I divined that I was not the only guest, for I immediately identified the ticket porter in disguise, assisting the family servant, and waiting at the foot of the stairs, to carry up my name. He looked, to the best of his ability, when he asked me for it confidentially, as if he had never seen me before, but well did I know him, and well did he know me. Conscience made cowards of us both. I found Mr. Waterbrook to be a middle-aged gentleman, with a short throat and a good deal of shirt collar, who only wanted a black nose to be the portrait of a pug dog. He told me he was happy to have the honor of making my acquaintance, and when I had paid my homage to Mrs. Waterbrook, presented me, with much ceremony, to a very awful lady in a black velvet dress, and a great black velvet hat, whom I remember as looking like a near relation of Hamlet's, say his aunt. Mrs. Henry Spiker was this lady's name, and her husband was there too. So cold a man, that his head, instead of being gray, seemed to be sprinkled with hoarfrost. Immense deference was shown to the Henry Spikers, male and female, which Agnes told me was on account of Mr. Henry Spiker being solicitor to something or to somebody, I forget what, or which, remotely connected with the treasury. I found Uriah Heep among the company, in a suit of black, and in deep humility. He told me, when I shook hands with him, that he was proud to be noticed by me, and that he really felt obliged to me for my condescension. I could have wished he had been less obliged to me, for he hovered about me in his gratitude all the rest of the evening, and whenever I said a word to Agnes, was sure, with his shadowless eyes and cadaverous face, to be looking gauntly down upon us from behind. There were other guests all iced for the occasion, as it struck me, like the wine. But there was one who attracted my attention, before he came in, on account of my hearing him announced as Mr. Traddles. My mind flew back to Salem House, and could it be Tommy, I thought, who used to draw the skeletons? I looked for Mr. Traddles with unusual interest. He was a sober, steady-looking young man of retiring manners, with a comic head of hair, and eyes that were rather wide open, and he got into an obscure corner so soon, that I had some difficulty in making him out. At length I had a good view of him, and either my vision deceived me, or it was the old unfortunate Tommy. I made my way to Mr. Waterbrook, and said, that I believed I had the pleasure of seeing an old schoolfellow there. Indeed. ... said Mr. Waterbrook, surprised. You are too young to have been at school with Mr. Henry Spiker? ... Oh, I don't mean him. ... I returned. I mean the gentleman named Traddles. ... Indeed. ... said my host, with much diminished interest. Possibly. ... if it's really the same person, ... said I, glancing towards him, it was at a place called Salem House where we were together, and he was an excellent fellow. ... oh yes. Traddles is a good fellow, ... returned my host nodding his head with an air of toleration. Traddles is quite a good fellow. ... it's a curious coincidence, ... said one. It is really, ... returned my host, quite a coincidence, that Traddles should be here at all. as Traddles was only invited this morning, when the place at table, intended to be occupied by Mrs. Henry Spiker's brother, became vacant, in consequence of his indisposition. A very gentlemanly man, Mrs. Henry Spiker's brother, Mr. Copperfield. Apostrophe, I murmured an assent, which was full of feeling, considering that I knew nothing at all about him, and I inquired what Mr. Traddles was by profession. Traddles, apostrophe returned Mr. Waterbrook, is a young man reading for the bar. Yes. He is quite a good fellow, nobody's enemy but his own. Apostrophe, is he his own enemy? Apostrophe, said I, sorry to hear this. Well, apostrophe returned Mr. Waterbrook, pursing up his mouth, and playing with his watch chain, in a comfortable, prosperous sort of way. I should say he was one of those men who stand in their own light. Yes, I should say he would never, for example, be worth £500. Traddles was recommended to me by a professional friend. Oh yes. Yes. He has a kind of talent for drawing briefs, and stating a case in writing, plainly. I am able to throw something in Traddles' way, in the course of the year, something for him considerable. Oh yes. Yes. Apostrophe, I was much impressed by the extremely comfortable, and satisfied manner in which Mr. Waterbrook delivered himself of this little word yes, every now and then. There was wonderful expression in it. It completely conveyed the idea of a man who had been born, not to say with a silver spoon, but with a scaling ladder, and had gone on mounting all the heights of life one after another, until now he looked, from the top of the fortifications, with the eye of a philosopher and a patron, on the people down in the trenches. My reflections on this theme were still in progress when dinner was announced. Mr. Waterbrook went down with Hamlet's aunt. Mr. Henry Spiker took Mrs. Waterbrook. Agnes, whom I should have liked to take myself, was given to a simpering fellow with weak legs. Uriah, Traddles, and I, as the junior part of the company, went down last, how we could. I was not so vexed at losing Agnes as I might have been, since it gave me an opportunity of making myself known to Traddles on the stairs, who greeted me with great fervor. While Uriah writhed with such obtrusive satisfaction and self-abasement, that I could gladly have pitched him over the banisters. Traddles and I were separated at table, being billeted in two remote corners. He in the glare of a red velvet lady, I, in the gloom of Hamlet's aunt. The dinner was very long, and the conversation was about the aristocracy and blood. Mrs. Waterbrook repeatedly told us that if she had a weakness, it was blood. It occurred to me several times that we should have got on better if we had not been quite so genteel. We were so exceedingly genteel that our scope was very limited. A Mr. and Mrs. Gulpidge were of the party, who had something to do at second hand, at least. Mr. Gulpidge had, with the law business of the bank, and what with the bank, and what with the treasury, we were as exclusive as the court circular. To mend the matter, Hamlet's aunt had the family failing of indulging in soliloquy, and held forth in a desultory manner, by herself, on every topic that was introduced. These were few enough, to be sure, but as we always fell back upon blood, she had as wide a field for abstract speculation as her nephew himself. We might have been a party of ogres, the conversation assumed such a sanguine complexion. I confess I am of Mrs. Waterbrook's opinion, apostrophe said Mr. Waterbrook, with his wine glass at his eye. Other things are all very well in their way, but give me blood. Apostrophe, oh. There is nothing, apostrophe observed Hamlet's aunt, so satisfactory to one. There is nothing that is so much one's beau ideal of all that sort of thing, speaking generally. There are some low minds, not many, I am happy to believe, but there are some that would prefer to do what I should call bow down before idols. Positively idols. Before service, intellect, and so on. But these are intangible points. Blood is not so. We see blood in a nose, and we know it. We meet with it in a chin, and we say, there it is. That's blood. It is an actual matter of fact. We pointed out. It admits of no doubt. Apostrophe, the simpering fellow with the weak legs, who had taken Agnes down, stated the question more decisively yet, I thought. Oh, you know, deuce take it, apostrophe said this gentleman, looking round the board with an imbecile smile, we can't forego blood, you know. We must have blood, you know. Some young fellows, you know, may be a little behind their station, perhaps, in point of education and behavior, and may go a little wrong, you know, and get themselves and other people into a variety of fixes and all that, but deuce take it, it's delightful to reflect that they've got blood in them. Myself, I'd rather at any time be knocked down by a man who had got blood in him than I'd be picked up by a man who hadn't. Apostrophe apostrophe this sentiment, as compressing the general question into a nutshell, gave the utmost satisfaction, and brought the gentleman into great notice until the ladies retired. After that, I observed that Mr. Gulpidge and Mr. Henry Spiker, who had hitherto been very distant, entered into a defensive alliance against us, the common enemy, and exchanged a mysterious dialogue across the table for our defeat and overthrow. That affair of the first bond for £4,500 has not taken the course that was expected. Spiker, apostrophe said Mr. Gulpidge. Do you mean the D of A.S.? Apostrophe said Mr. Spiker. The C of BS. Apostrophe said Mr. Gulpidge. Mr. Spiker raised his eyebrows, and looked much concerned. When the question was referred to Lord I needn't name him, apostrophe said Mr. Gulpidge, checking himself, I understand, apostrophe said Mr. Spiker, and apostrophe, Mr. Gulpidge darkly nodded was referred to him, his answer was, money, or no release. Apostrophe, Lord bless my soul. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Mr. Spiker. Money, or no release, apostrophe, repeated Mr. Gulpidge, firmly. The next in reversion, you understand me? Apostrophe, apostrophe, K apostrophe, said Mr. Spiker, with an ominous look. Apostrophe, K then positively refused to sign. He was attended at Newmarket for that purpose, and he point-blank refused to do it. Apostrophe, Mr. Spiker was so interested, that he became quite stony. So the matter rests at this hour, apostrophe said Mr. Gulpidge, throwing himself back in his chair. Our friend Waterbrook will excuse me, if I forbear to explain myself generally, on account of the magnitude of the interests involved. Apostrophe, Mr. Waterbrook was only too happy, as it appeared to me, to have such interests, and such names, even hinted at, across his table. He assumed an expression of gloomy intelligence, though I am persuaded he knew no more about the discussion than I did, and highly approved of the discretion that had been observed. Mr. Spiker, after the receipt of such a confidence, naturally desired to favor his friend with a confidence of his own. Therefore the foregoing dialogue was succeeded by another, in which it was Mr. Gulpidge's turn to be surprised, and that by another in which the surprise came round to Mr. Spiker's turn again, and so on, turn and turn about. All this time we, the outsiders, remained oppressed by the tremendous interests involved in the conversation, and our host regarded us with pride, as the victims of a salutary awe and astonishment. I was very glad indeed to get upstairs to Agnes, and to talk with her in a corner, and to introduce Traddles to her, who was shy, but agreeable, and the same good-natured creature still. As he was obliged to leave early, on account of going away next morning for a month, I had not nearly so much conversation with him as I could have wished, but we exchanged addresses, and promised ourselves the pleasure of another meeting when he should come back to town. He was greatly interested to hear that I knew Steerforth, and spoke of him with such warmth that I made him tell Agnes what he thought of him. But Agnes only looked at me the while, and very slightly shook her head, when only I observed her. As she was not among people with whom I believed she could be very much at home, I was almost glad to hear that she was going away within a few days, though I was sorry at the prospect of parting from her again so soon. This caused me to remain until all the company were gone. Conversing with her, and hearing her sing, was such a delightful reminder to me of my happy life in the grave old house she had made so beautiful, that I could have remained there half the night. But, having no excuse for staying any longer, when the lights of Mr. Waterbrook's society were all snuffed out, I took my leave very much against my inclination. I felt then, more than ever, that she was my better angel, and if I thought of her sweet face and placid smile, as though they had shone on me from some removed being, like an angel, I hope I thought no harm. I have said that the company were all gone, but I ought to have accepted Uriah, whom I don't include in that denomination, and who had never ceased to hover near us. He was close behind me when I went downstairs. He was close beside me when I walked away from the house, slowly fitting his long skeleton fingers into the still longer fingers of a great Guy Fawkes pair of gloves. It was in no disposition for Uriah's company, but in remembrance of the entreaty Agnes had made to me, that I asked him if he would come home to my rooms and have some coffee. "Oh, really, Master Copperfield," apostrophe he rejoined, "I beg your pardon, Mr. Copperfield, but the other comes so natural, I don't like that you should put a constraint upon yourself to ask a humble person like me to your house." "Apostrophe, there is no constraint in the case," apostrophe said one. "Will you come?" "Apostrophe, I should like to, very much," apostrophe replied Uriah, with a writhe. "Well then, come along," apostrophe apostrophe said one. I could not help being rather short with him, but he appeared not to mind it. We went the nearest way, without conversing much upon the road, and he was so humble in respect of those scarecrow gloves, that he was still putting them on, and seemed to have made no advance in that labor, when we got to my place. I led him up the dark stairs, to prevent his knocking his head against anything, and really his damp cold hand felt so like a frog in mine, that I was tempted to drop it and run away. Agnes and hospitality prevailed, however, and I conducted him to my fireside. When I lighted my candles, he fell into meek transports with the room that was revealed to him, and when I heated the coffee in an unassuming block tin vessel in which Mrs. Krupp delighted to prepare it chiefly, I believe, because it was not intended for the purpose, being a shaving pot, and because there was a patent invention of great price moldering away in the pantry, he professed so much emotion that I could joyfully have scalded him. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.